Backseat Producers, NM156, Operation Mindcrime. Tony.
Hey, this is Daryl.
This is Dr. X.
Yes. This is... Welcome to episode 156.
Right.
I've been planning this for a long time to do this episode.
It was cold, it was cold outside last time we talked about it.
We got to the point where I realized, you know, this podcast may actually hit 156 episodes.
Yeah.
Because I had been, you know, Deuce and I had talked about doing this way back. I specifically remember a night, and I can't remember which night it was now, that we went to the theater, saw a movie, and left the theater and went someplace and recorded, basically across the street to the bar and recorded. And I think it was the Rocky episode. And we recorded in the bar, and then afterwards we talked about, you know, I want to do this album. It's an album, but it's a rock opera. And I think this is something we could really pull off and do it as a movie. And that, I looked up, that was January of 2007 when we recorded that episode. So I've been thinking about doing this for a while.
So, yeah, where is Deuce?
And he's our music guy, too.
Yeah.
So
he's hiding under the table.
He's locked up in Dr. X's machinations. And some people would actually think that's more literal than...
He's waiting for the phone call.
I think he's had the phone call already. He is doing the needful for Dr. X at the moment. So we're talking about Operation Mindcrime. There's a couple of noteworthy things that we can toss out right now. First, this year, and just a couple weeks ago, they celebrated the 20th anniversary of Empire, which is the follow-up album the Queensryche did.
It's
after
really the first time they got noticed outside of metal circles, to be honest with you.
And to be honest, that was when I noticed them.
I actually noticed them in, not because of Empire, but it was in 1990. A guy in my dorm had a Mindcrime poster.
Okay.
And I asked him about it.
He
was like, sit down over here.
Yeah.
Walked over, and I believe, if I remember correctly, it was vinyl.
That makes sense.
These things called records.
Oh God, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And then he opened up the mini fridge and handed me a beer and said, "Sit back,
yep,
and enjoy." And I didn't really. I listened. I don't think I actually owned a copy for a couple more years until I worked with a guy named Tom who was a huge fan as well. And that's really when I started getting to them. I didn't actually have access to all the albums until I met my ex-wife. Because she was a huge fan. But...
Yeah, for me it was... I discovered them with the song Empire. When that hit, that was something that was just like, man, this is different. This is cool. This is not something that I've been listening to in the past.
Strangely political for metal. I mean,
right. Well, yeah. It was... You know, I'm the guy who likes a lot of hair metal. I'll admit it. I loved Warrant, Skid Row, not so much on the Poison. Now you laugh, but
no,
even Warrant and Skid Row, once they got past their first couple of cheeseball albums, they did some more serious stuff.
I had a bass lesson one time for the bassist for Saigon Kick.
Wow, nice.
Thought I'd throw that out there.
Nice. Name dropper.
I don't
what's
remember.
That? What's that? You dropped a name there.
I don't remember his name. Honestly, I don't. It might have been Steve. Let's just say it was a weekend when I was camping. and I wasn't myself a lot.
So, but yeah, I mean, I heard this song, I saw the video, and I was just, this is cool. This is really cool. And I was just about to go to my junior year at U of I. So I bought the CD, listened to it a bunch.
Speaking of which, go Tigers. Anyway.
Whatever. Listened to it a bunch, and then went to school there, and my roommate was a ridiculous Queensryche fan. Owned all the albums. He got me hooked into a lot of other of the more progressive metal stuff.
Yeah.
Fate's Warning, Sabotage, some of even the lighter stuff in the Marillion and
Dream Theater.
Extreme. Dream Theater I found on my own.
Yeah.
Dream Theater I did find on my own. Extreme, I knew about Extreme from before really they were on that progressive side, because they kind of
fell into the third album that they ended up.
Three Sides to Every Story was where they really kind of grabbed onto it.
But I mean, if you listen to the album stuff that didn't get radio airplay on the previous two albums,
yeah,
there was a lot of signs there that things had a place to go that were really interesting.
You know, if you listen to early Leopard, there was actually some stuff in early Leopard that they could have gone down that track, but they chose Money.
Well, they got kind of disarmed.
That's true. It happens.
Sorry, I had to make the bad drama joke. I'm sorry.
Bad metal jokes. Bad metal jokes all around. This episode is going to 11. I'm just saying. So yeah, I mean, and then I retroactively discovered Mindcrime and was just freaking blown away.
Yeah, it was really the first concept album that I had encountered that wasn't older than I was.
Yes.
Yeah, or wasn't from a previous generation. I mean, because I was just buying my own music when The Wall came out.
Right.
And I didn't really discover The Wall until I was in high school.
Well, also, there was one previous before that. It was Tommy by The Who, which kind of set the stage for all of them.
Like I said, Tommy was prior to... Tommy in the 60s or the 70s?
70s. Very late 70s.
Very late 70s? Okay. Well, I still wasn't buying my own music at that point. At least if it didn't have a Disney logo. So...
That kind of set the stage for all rock operas. I mean, it was the breakthrough that had been occurred, and after that, you had a whole wave of them with some varying degrees of success.
But the linchpins of them
were really Tommy and The Wall. I mean, those are the ones that
really stand out.
Well, if you say rock opera, that's what people go to.
Well, in the late 80s, people weren't making concept packages like that.
Right.
No.
It was
album-oriented rock all the way.
Well, in contemporary... And if they were, they were older bands that were in the latter part of their career. It wasn't young bands that were on the rise.
Right.
Well, a young band can't afford to experiment like that too much.
The one that I can think of before that would have been Kilroy Was Here.
Yeah, Sticks. Except if you look at Kilroy Was Here was really one of their last big hit albums.
True.
I mean, they had a career before that.
Right.
Well, also,
I don't disagree. Yeah. I mean, it plays into what you were saying.
Yeah.
It plays into just what you were saying about bands that were kind of on the downside.
Where they could own it on vinyl.
Well, also, I'm going to throw
Kilroy Was Here. So did I.
So I'll throw one more, too.
Domo Arigato.
Mr.
Roboto.
Frank Zappa's Joe's Garage, which is a two-album set. It didn't start out as a rock opera thing, but it was more, a concept album because it told a whole story all the way through.
Yeah, I didn't discover Frank Zappa and Joe's Garage until I discovered some other things first.
Right. Most people do. That's usually what happens with Zappa. People tend to come around
that
from
that. That was an apartment
strange...
in Maplewood, and some weird things happened there, man, I'm just going to say right now.
So the Zappa, that's always weird things.
There was a summer in the early 90s that I don't have a lot of memories of.
Yeah, but there was a whole slate of them that came out in the
80s. Yeah.
And all of the various degrees of political axe to grind.
But I would also say that they were probably the first hair metal band to really move out of let's get drunk and get messed up and go out with our girls and
yeah and if I'm gonna throw out one more little wank here about concept albums, another band that I follow didn't really get into them until after I found Queensryche was Marillion, and in 85 they had Misplaced Childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another concept album. Now this one wasn't political so much as kind of one of those self journey kind of albums.
I wouldn't quite put them in the prog
no.
metal area.
No, they're more than they're more in the traditional kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, well, early Marillion falls more into the vein of original prog rock, which was more like Yes and ELO Genesis and, stuff like that, and
that's where this was definitely the first in a generational on that side of that generation.
I think this album specifically cemented themselves into a new genre that was kind of like, and I remember hearing it and saying it at the time, thinking man's metal.
Well, and
it was something, and I mean, there's always been that vein through a lot of metal acts where they hide it.
Yeah.
But Queensryche kind of owned it. They're like, screw trying to hide it. You know, we're going to be overt about it. We're going to talk about the things we want to talk about. We're going to write love songs. We're going to write.
Well, and they made a transition. I mean, you look at. And really, you should go on YouTube and look.
Oh,
at
yes.
Queen of the Reich.
Well, and not only that, but The Warning and Rage for Order.
Well, Rage
when he had, like, the vampire outfits.
The thing is that you start with that EP that has Queen of the Reich on it, and you move through Rage for Order and The Warning and get to Mindcrime. There's a progression from this more dark, gothic, really severe early 80s hair metal band to moving towards this more flannelly working man, thinking man's hair metal by the end of the 80s.
And really, I mean, one thing worth noting is they're from Seattle.
Yeah.
And I think they were a metal band. They were a metal band who drank the grunge Kool-Aid but didn't change the type of music they played or the look.
Well, and the thing is you could already see in the late 80s and early 90s, there was a move from fishnets and pleather and everything to denim, leather, and kind of less glam and more... More proletarian, for lack of a better term.
One of the great things
is blue-collar rock.
Look. Yeah, I mean,
well, one of the great things
without going into the Bob Seger closet.
Well, it's starting to come around to the folk side of the business,
right?
And one of the great things about Queensryche, if you follow their Facebook page, they actually pull out a lot of the old photos and like old candids where they're like dressed in ridiculous gear.
Doing the whole gam rock thing.
I almost played a drinking game with myself this morning sitting on the couch watching video Mindcrime, because in the 7 videos that were involved on it, Jeff Tate had 7 different hairstyles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. And the hairstyles were... They were ridiculous hairstyles.
Oh, my God.
So,
And I'd also like to nominate Scott Rockenfeld for the most kick-ass drum kit ever.
Yeah.
The chains and everything. And that's just pretty amazing.
You know, in starting to get kind of focused in on talking about Mindcrime itself, one of the things that I never really noticed, and I think it was my last couple of listen-throughs that I did specifically for this, the drums are just slamming.
He's amazing.
Man!
I have always thought that he was one of the strongest parts of the group. His drums and DeGarmo's leads were probably the two things that make that era of Queensryche so superior to any other.
Yeah.
To my way of thinking. Beyond Jeff's vocals and that, because that you have to take out of the equation and just put off the side because it's in a place by itself.
Right.
But instrumentally, the two of them really are the backbone of early Queensryche.
Absolutely.
So
I have no disagreement there. All right, so jumping into this a little bit, I specifically wanted episode 156. You understand why. You, Daryl, probably do not as well. And some people who may be coming to this wondering just what the hell we're talking about. All right, so it was on... Was it on Rage?
Okay. I'm not remembering. It was not one of my favorites.
Okay. My favorite... NM156... is a favorite song of mine.
Yeah.
I enjoy the song very much.
No, I'm just talking about the earlier, like the...
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, they're hit and miss.
I say if you had to pick my era of Queensryche, it's Mindcrime, Empire, and Promised Land. That era right in there is where I'm...
Great
most
stuff.
Most of my stuff is set. Great.
Yeah, one of the little memes going around on Facebook was...
Yeah, I saw that. I don't do those.
Yeah, I could only pick one, and it was tearing at me that I did not pick all three, but I ended up going with Promised Land mostly because of the song Someone Else.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I have a very personal connection to that song. But the song NM156 basically is another story song. They do a lot of stories, and yeah. they did a number of them, especially in the early
up to their lyrics. Right. In a lot of cases.
And this is a kind of a sci-fi story. It's a futuristic world where kind of a big brother is ruling everything, and there's one guy who's a button pusher who's kind of the protagonist of the story, and his job is just to input the numbers of people who have violated the order of the system. Yeah. And violation of the order of the system means you're removed from the system.
Yeah, and I think Rage 4 is the correct place for this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's very much it's brutal, and the lyrics are even is this brutality, or are we using logic to mask our brutality? And the twist in the story comes when the number that he punches in is number 156, and that's his own number.
Right.
And so then everything goes kind of apeshit. So I focused on this number and have plotted for at least a year that episode 156 was going to be the Mindcrime.
You know, in listening to this today and actually listening to that story just now, I am reminded of how amazingly awesome the moralities of the 80s were and the things we were worried about.
Oh, yeah.
Because, really? We're there again.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the same place of... you could take Mindcrime literally out of the end of the 80s and the anger that's involved in it. And while it tells a story, there is very much of the politics of the band in it.
Oh, very much.
And the thing is, you could take that and the anger that's involved and the indignance and the rage and the
Sense of helplessness.
The sense of helplessness and the call to do something about it,
mm-hmm.
and just pick it up, march 25 years down the line, and drop it down, because guess what?
That's what they did with Operation Mindcrime 2.
Yeah, except I think, to my way of thinking...
But it was more...
Of a revenge story.
It was more...
Thought we weren't going to delve into Mindcrime 2.
I'm only delving into the political aspect of it, because they brought that politics to their concert, to the live concert. It really didn't have anything as much to do with the story, because this was just a continuation. It didn't have that same...
They have
same
updated some of the references, like in Revolution Calling and stuff like that, as they through the years as they performed
right.
the album.
Right. They upgraded South America
things.
To Saudi Arabia
or various other things
right.
throughout. I mean, even on. What ostensibly at the time was the last time they were going to do the entirety of Mindcrime, which was on the Empire Tour, on the Building mm-hmm. Empire Tour.
Yep.
They updated it for that, because
yes.
when they were touring, it was in the middle of the whole Gulf War crisis
right.
the first time around. And so But I think there's a level of anger and rage and helplessness and feeling like the system has failed you that translates in great immediacy to today.
Yes. This album, I don't think this album could have been made any other time than 1988 when it was made.
Hmm?
87, 88.
Yeah.
It fits. Everything about it fits. It fits the political culture, it fits the social culture, it fits what was going on in media with religion.
I disagree. I think you can make the album today because the same.
Oh, you can make it today.
The same problems in media, politics, and religion that they rail against in just even in one song,
mm-hmm.
in Revolution Calling, are still the same things
you can,
are going on today.
It would be the same concept. I think the execution would be totally different.
The execution would be different, absolutely.
Because I think you'd have things like, instead of Nicki being a drug addict, Nicki could be a hacker. Nicki could have antisocial disorders because he's lost in the machine and he's a cog in that machine.
But at the same time, I think you could also, looking at it from the standpoint of kind of a lower income area, the drugs are still as rampant, and it's the same drugs. Heroin's making a comeback, kids.
True.
I mean, it's...
Comeback, has it ever really gone away?
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna playing in popularity.
Well, I'm going to drop something here, too. This story is universal enough that a kid in Palestine could be listening to this mm-hmm. and get the same buzz off it as a kid in the ghettos of Mexico City could.
Henry Rollins tells a story about being in Israel and talking to the Israeli kids and the Palestinian kids, and they're all, you know, each separate group is telling them, oh yeah, we love the Ramones, we love Black Flag, and he could go over to the other one and say, yeah man, we love the Ramones, we love Black Flag. Okay, well, why aren't you guys talking to each other?
Yeah.
We don't talk to those guys.
Right.
You know,
the tastes are universal, but the problems are still, the barriers are still there. Yeah. But again, this whole album is universal enough that anybody who's half alive or even half paying attention could get something out of. I mean, it speaks a bunch of universal truths. The truth of I feel powerless. I feel the system's failed me. It's corrupt or it's failed me. I'm looking for somebody to give me direction.
All right, so...
And therein lies the problem.
Who gives you the direction?
And dude, did you have your eyebrows, like, shaped or something? Because you got, like, the Dr. X eyebrows going on.
No, it just does that when I talk about Queens, right? They just naturally form that way.
Dr. X.
All right, so in talking about this album, for those of us who have just listened to us wank and give a history lesson about... metal and Queensryche and
good
politics.
Thing, good thing Adam's on that.
Oh God,
he just cut things out.
He just cut the whole thing. He just wouldn't do it.
Well, let's get into the album itself.
So the album itself.
Okay, how many songs make up the album?
17.
Okay, 17.
No, 15
separate
15.
Tracks, which essentially build an entire story.
The re-release had 17. That's
yeah, because it's two extra tracks.
Okay,
yeah. All right, so yeah, it's 15. It's 15 tracks, three or four of which are instrumental, or at least instrumental with voiceover.
Mm-hmm. There, well, you've got to look at the first two. The first one's all voiceover. The second one's instrumental. There's one instrumental later, and I think the final.
Waiting for 22.
Yeah. Waiting for 22, and Electric Requiem is really instrumental with a voiceover.
Yeah, but there's the final voiceover.
Waiting for 22, and then the final voiceover.
Which I don't know if it's
but the final voiceover. The final voiceover is the end of Eyes of a Stranger.
Okay, so mm-hmm. it's not its own separate track.
It's not its own separate track. All right, so the story starts off with, and this is where. Because I had the libretto that came with
Live Crime.
Yeah. And that was interesting because it actually...
It's in a box somewhere in my basement.
It's in mine is, too.
Well, let's start off with our first two tracks. I remember now in Anarchy X.
The one thing worth noting is the libretto states that as this album starts, it is 6 o'clock, 6:00 p.m.
Well, you see it live, period. That's on the screen.
And that displays on the screen at 6 o'clock p.m.
Yeah.
And that's worth noting.
Right.
Because the ending.
Yes, it's very important later.
The first track I remember now. And it's basically we get the status of what is going on right now.
It's a voiceover of a hospital.
You get hints of it.
And funnily enough, a voiceover, the whole overhead track of Dr. Blair, Dr. Hamilton, it is a sound canned soundbite. You hear in all kinds of things.
You used to hear it on ER. You used to hear it in a lot of soap operas.
And a lot of movies.
Yeah, a lot of movies.
And every time I hear it, I'm like, right on.
Dr. Blair.
Dr. J. Hamilton.
So
Flight Zone is for loading and unloading only.
Dr. Pepper.
Nikki, our main character, says, "I remember now. I remember how it started."
Actually, the nurse comes in first.
That's true. The nurse does come in first.
He's still awake because
there's the television on. The television is on, and if you listen carefully to the television, we get a hint of what's been going on.
There's been a series of murders, but a suspect had been detained. He's in the hospital. Okay, then we hear the nurse come in, say, "Oh, you're still awake," and she gives him some medicine to put him under, and then as she's walking out, says, "Sweet dreams, you bastard."
And you hear her flip the light.
Right.
And that's when Nikki says, I remember
that's
now.
That's when he wakes up again and says, "I remember now." And Start launches into his story.
Right.
"I did the things they told me to do." And now we get the idea that, okay, he's the man in the hospital.
And then probably the most amazing drum lead-in ever.
Oh, Anarchy X is just...
I listen to that just by itself.
You know, in hearing that, because it had been a while since I just listened to the album straight through, and I heard the beginning of Anarchy X, and I thought, within a week, this is going to be my ringtone. I will make it my ringtone. This is going to happen.
One of the most epic drum lead-ins, and it's aggressive, and it is in your face immediately.
It lays the groundwork for what's coming.
Yeah.
Don't close your eyes.
Well, and there's,
don't hide.
And there's
this is going to be in your face, and you just better open your eyes and expect to just experience this.
Well, and there's more drop-ins in there too. There's drop-ins of newscasts and voices and stuff that you hear through the whole thing.
Right.
And it's essentially your overture.
Then we get to our first major song, "Revolution Calling,"
"Revolution Calling" is Nikki's introduction.
Well, this is an introduction to Nikki.
It's an introduction to the world
and his state of mind.
To "Revolution Calling," there's no break.
No,
it's just it literally dives right into it.
Rolls in.
Yeah, we call it a separate track, but if you're listening to it,
there's almost no break in between. It just kind of
rolls. There is none.
No, yeah,
there
is none. Drops
it just
right
rolls
in.
Right into the flows from one to the other.
I think on Live Crime it's one track.
I believe you're right. Yeah, Live Crime has a couple of these as blended tracks.
Yeah.
So we get an idea who Nikki is. The first thing he says, "For a price, I'd do about anything except pull the trigger. For that, I need a pretty good cause." So you get the idea that Nikki's our protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Nikki is not a hero. Well, and I'll argue that there is no... This is a story that will be likened to something like The Watchmen, in that none of the characters are particularly
heroic
or good. There's some that...
They're all broken.
They're all broken in their own ways, in their own special ways.
And really, this is Nikki's manifesto.
Yes.
It's what he believes in. It's what he sees going on. But
he's also
are getting the impression there's something lying under the surface that he's not telling you. Because at this point, we don't have any indication of Nikki's problem.
Right. Yeah, Nikki's kind of a lost soul, and he's just angry. He's angry at the situation, but he's angry without focus. He's angry at everything. I mean, and that pretty much, you know, he's angry at politicians, he's angry at the media, he's, I mean,
and religion, and
he very much says that. He's, you know, I'm tired of all this bullshit they're telling me on TV about the communists. I'm, you know, I'm just the shady preachers, the, you know,
the shady businessman, and he's laying out his litany of society there, right. Everything that's wrong.
This reads like the manifesto of a guy who walked into a building, started shooting people.
It's a little less focused.
I
don't think it does. I think it reads like the manifesto of a young person who's just opened their eyes to the world around
just
them
woke
and,
up.
Seen really just how screwed up the world is. Because there's that point, at some point in your life,
where
your eyes suddenly open and you see the world around you and you realize that adults are screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a mess. And the world around you is screwed up and a mess. And, oh, by the way, this is the world we're going to hand you.
It's a righteous kind of anger.
Yeah, and that's what this is. This isn't nutball angry. This is a young person who's angry and doesn't know what to do about it, but wants to do something about it and doesn't know how. And
right.
just needs to be pointed in the, quote, right direction.
Right. Yes. And he is quoted, or he is pointed in a direction.
And in 1988, there were a lot of us that
right.
felt like that.
Yeah, and this is the personality type that I went to school with, and you did too. You went to school surrounded by the military.
No, actually, I didn't.
You didn't? Okay,
no.
So
my dad was out by the time I was 6.
Oh, okay.
So you didn't.
I was still in high school when my dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah.
And one of the things is you grow up around that, and you have people that grow up more ingrained in the intelligence type communities, because we had a few of those around, and we had some guys there that would. I had guys in high school telling me, "Here's the kind of kids," and he would like point to people and say, "That person, that person, that person. Those are the people that either the CIA or the Soviets could use."
Well, and there's the growing up in that environment. It's a whole different culture, and it's
sure.
kind of. In a lot of ways, sheltered from the real world.
Yes,
to some extent, because there's kind of the company line. To be
mm-hmm.
honest with you, and
you're
respected
right.
as a member of a family of an officer or whatever, or a sergeant or whoever, a member of an Air Force member's family to toe that line.
Yep,
because your actions reflect upon that person. So,
oh, absolutely.
And the thing is. I had a friend
who got picked up for shoplifting at the BX.
Yeah.
That is a serious no-no. That goes on your parents'
okay.
record.
Okay.
That's a big deal.
Yep.
So, my point is Nikki is somebody who is ripe for molding.
Yeah, no.
He's very susceptible.
He's very susceptible to someone who wants to misuse him, but he would also be susceptible to someone who is going to point him in the right direction.
Right.
But that's not the direction he chooses.
That's not what happens.
We move into our next track, Operation Mindcrime, where he meets up
with
Dr. X.
And this is where we get more of Nikki's story. Mm-hmm. And we find out pretty upfront that Nikki's got a problem beyond his righteous anger. Nikki's kind of a street kid, so he's been...
It's right there in the first two lines.
Yeah.
Just takes a minute, you feel no pain, gotta make something in your life, boy, give me one more vein.
Yep.
Nikki's
got a problem with the drugs. Yep.
And that is what makes him ripe for recruitment.
Yes.
And one of the interesting things that stepping out of the story for a second,
mm-hmm.
about this whole thing, is at any given time, along the whole thing, Jeff Tate is either playing Nikki or he's playing X.
Yes.
And particularly in this one, this is really X's song.
Oh, yeah.
But there's points where he's Nikki.
Mm-hmm.
And watching him do it on stage, and I did not see the one where they did the full theatrical, but even in Promised Land, there were some theatrical elements
yes.
to it. On the Promised Land, when they did the kind of compressed mind crime that they did.
Right.
And watching Tate switch gears between Nikki and X was pretty impressive.
Yeah, he does it on this, and he did it in the theatrical version. The difference with the theatrical version is he actually had, there was an actor to stand in for Nikki at the times when Jeff wasn't singing the
right.
Nikki parts.
Right.
So when it was he actually did costume changes, slight
yeah.
costume changes. For X and for Nikki, so that you knew who he was supposed to be at the
right.
time. If you weren't that familiar with it, you're at the concert. You're probably familiar with it.
Just even listening to the song.
There. Yeah, you can hear the changes.
Changes from one to the other, and there's no change other than the lyrics change.
Right. So we get a little more of Nikki's history and how.
Well, this is
how,
a recruitment. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
This is
Well, the hitman for the order when you couldn't go to school, had a skin yeah. job for a hairdo, man, you look pretty cool. It's giving you a little more of the story that you didn't know, but
he's had a criminal past.
Yes.
And he's
this
got
is,
a drug problem.
This
and
is
now
this
I'm
is,
offering
this
you
is X saying,
else.
Look,
yes.
look, I know where you've been.
Yeah.
I can see where you've been. You had a problem.
Let me help you.
I'll give you.
You need to do something for me.
I'll give you focus, and I'll give you the drugs that you need, and the focus that you're craving too. I'll satisfy all your cravings.
And
well,
I
don't even think that the offer of the drugs is as explicit.
Well, that's just a
at this
bonus.
Point. At this point, what he's offering to help him
power.
With his problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's
well,
and he's giving and, him he's giving him focus, and he's giving him power.
Yeah,
he is empowering him,
right.
but he's empowering him. By handing him a gun.
Well, and he's vague enough about the whole drug thing. We'll help you. We'll take care of
right.
your problem.
We'll take care of that problem,
we'll
too.
We'll take care of your problem. Which can mean either we're going to help you get clean...
Or we'll help you score.
We're going to help you score.
Yep.
It's kind of vague and ambiguous at that point because he's not... He doesn't want to scare him off. He wants to... He's dragging him in. And, I mean, in the chorus, you know, we're an underground revolution working overtime. There's a job for you in the system with nothing to sign.
That's and I think the second line there,
yeah.
I've got a job for you in the system, he's offering him something concrete.
Yeah.
I've got a place for you. You didn't have a place before.
And
you
especially
were,
with an out. You're not signing up to anything.
Right.
You can walk away anytime you want. They tell
sure.
you that. They always tell you that.
They always tell you that.
You know? At this point, he's not. X is his friend. He's reaching across and he's being the friend to come in. We'll take care of you. You know, let me put you to work.
We're the family you need.
The one change in the chorus: if you've come to see the doctor, he'll give you the cure.
Yeah,
this is his pitch. This is Dr. X's pitch,
oh, yeah.
and it's a hard sell. He's giving him a gun,
oh, yeah.
and he's telling him, "Look, I know you're angry, and I know you need focus." But what this city really needs is you, and you are a machine. You are a machine of death.
The video that they use on Video Mindcrime, which is essentially a compilation
yeah.
of some of the videos they did for select
right.
songs.
That's actually a really cool scene
because
it plays out in a different way.
He's got X has got a revolver.
Yes,
and he loads a bullet in. He spins it, puts it to his own head, and pulls the trigger.
Right.
Puts another one in, spins it. Flips it around and hands it to Nikki. And in the course of the rest of the song, Nikki works towards putting it to his own head and pulling the trigger.
Right.
There's a trust gaining that goes on there.
Right. And the video just shows it in a metaphorical
yeah,
way, but
it's very metaphorical. But at the same time, what's happening here is X is gaining Nikki's trust.
Yes.
I'm not asking you to do anything more
than I
would do.
Yeah.
You're risking your life.
And
I'm going
like
to risk mine.
Guys like that always do, because they're just as willing to die for their cause as the guy that they're signing up. In fact,
it's that you're doing the dying.
Yeah.
Now, we kind of go into the next track here, Speak.
Which is back into Nikki's voice.
Back into Nikki. This is... I've heard this play out a couple of different times, and there's kind of different takes on exactly what's going on in the story here. One take I've heard is that this is Nikki basically speaking at a rally. This is Nikki empowered.
Yeah.
But I don't see that out of that character. That's not that was never the purpose of Nicky.
I think this is
Nicky selling himself on.
Yeah,
well, this is Mickey's in Nicky's internal dialogue. Yeah, he's with himself. He's psychic.
Yeah, this is himself in the mirror. He's doing his daily affirmation.
Comes in later,
right?
And that's the thing is, I think this is Nicky standing in front of the mirror trying to justify to himself what he's just signed up to. And by this point, I think he's probably already carried out part of his mission.
Yes.
And yeah, he's trying to live with himself and trying to merge the righteous indignation he had beforehand with what he's doing now, and it's also affected by the drugs.
Yes.
Because there's a part of this that's also very much he's not in his right mind at this point, and the drug use is now getting worse because of the guilt and the trying to cope with the thing.
I don't know his guilt, because if you scroll down just a little bit down,
the guilt's at the beginning. By the time he gets to the end of the song, he's literally talked himself back into
he's self-justified.
Part of Dr. X's pitch in the previous song was, look, I'm going to make you an angel of death.
Mm-hmm.
A death machine. And Nicky takes that in the previous song? I don't think that's...
No, it's down there. He said, he becomes the angel of death.
Yeah. But it's in... You're a one-man death machine.
Yeah, that's what... Yeah,
make the city bleed.
Yeah. That's in the song Operation Mindcrime.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's in Mindcrime that...
He doesn't actually go the angel of death route. That's where... That's the next step that Nicky puts on himself.
Right.
He has taken upon himself this role as the Messiah.
Well, that he's justified.
He's doing. Right.
This is him talking himself into... He's carried out, by this point, some of his mission. And this is him justifying what he's done to himself. Basically to the old him.
Right.
And by the time you get to the end of the song, he is talked himself into... The cause and completely justified himself.
And this is where religion starts really coming into play, too, is in this song.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a couple of points in line. He says, religion is to blame. I'm the new Messiah, a death mm-hmm. angel with a gun. Later he says, I've given my life to become who I am. He's looking at himself as if he's made some huge sacrifice to give of himself to this cause.
Well, and there's some other imagery too in the lyrics of "Speak the word is all of us."
Right.
There's some religious connotation.
Oh yeah.
I think they actually got the lyrics wrong to a little bit in lacking the capital.
He's starting. You want to put it this way? He's starting to become a little drunk on his own power, or a little.
He's accepting his role as a cog in the machine.
Talked himself. And beating himself into a frenzy mentally
mm-hmm.
of justifying the killing that he's doing.
One of the lines in the song definitely puts it in, at least in this case, in 1988, and sets this as this was a modern, you know, this was happening now. This was not happening in a future time, in a past time. And that's the 7 years of power. Because it happened in 88. And it's like, man, they couldn't have got any more
they're taking pot shots at Reagan.
Honestly,
you can put it in other times. But...
I mean, this describes just as easily the early 2000s as it does the early 80s.
Well, it's late 80s, because it came out in 88.
Slightly different. It's close. I'll give you. It is close.
Okay. I will stand by my statement.
Well, the thing
let
me just throw in here what was going on in 88. This was Reagan's last term.
Mm-hmm.
There was a whole bunch of scandals going on in a big name televangelists.
Yeah.
We're going on, story, and that's essentially what Nicky's kind of into
too.
Well,
there's that. There's Iran Contra. There's the whole thing, you know, and Reaganomics. I mean, and the the same thing that occurred during the early 2000s occurred during the early 80s, which was corporations were deregulated, corporations were going tax break after tax break after tax break, and it was the era of big business, much like the early 2000s were.
That was the go-go 80s.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's very, 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 very similar.
This next line, before we get to the final course out, this is one of the lines that always struck me as very interesting, and it was very telling that this album wasn't more popular, especially this song. This song would, if this
album
song
got out at 50 on the Billboard charts in the U.S.
Yeah, it gained a lot more of its sales in 90 and 91.
Yeah, but the highest spot it hit on the Billboard charts was 50.
Right. If it was more popular, I think there might have been a little bit of questioning about this next line, because specifically there were rap albums that said very similar things, and especially
"Are you talking about educate the masses will burn the White House down."
Yep,
yeah. You know what?
That's one of those lines that it's always struck me as interesting that there was never any kind of questioning about that.
Yeah,
but you know, I think it's completely justified, and anybody that questioned it would be looked at as a fool.
I think it was
looked in the context
of
it.
In likelihood, it probably was questioned. I mean, this is the era of the PMRC. And Tipper,
yes, I know,
and her crusade.
I know,
and
which it strikes me funny that the politics of that. But
well, except to be honest, it's always been pretty well understood that her politics very, very wildly from her husband's. He was the son of a Southern Democrat. She came from a family I think that was probably very differently oriented.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was on a list somewhere.
Probably. It just strikes me as odd.
Well, the same thing. Fun thing is Two Live Crew practically said the same thing in this song. By the time I get to Arizona, and they could never get any airplay.
By the time I get to Arizona, it was not Two Live Crew.
Oh, excuse me.
That would be Public Enemy.
Public Enemy. Excuse me.
And who I have tremendous respect for versus one that I do not.
Okay. okay. Yeah. Public Enemy did the
very
whole
different.
Thing.
Different.
Yeah. Okay.
But coming to Arizona was. But see, that was actually. That wasn't so much directed at the White House as it was directed at
Arizona yeah,
which was over the market.
But it's a similar, attack.
Well, but if you look at Public Enemy and the history of what they wrote, they were coming at militancy from a very different angle.
Well, they were more overt about it. Let's put
they
this
were
way.
Very overt about it and continue to be very overt about it.
Yeah.
The politics were always at the forefront of what they did, and continue to be. But that it was not. It was never surprising that they were going to get involved in that kind of a controversy.
Yeah,
eventually.
Nobody expected
Queensryche,
a hair metal band,
mm-hmm. no,
to step out and say
the same thing,
the same kind of thing.
Right. They wrapped it in a prettier picture, though, or in a prettier package. Queensryche did, I would say, in a more
Black Planet, and It Takes a Nation of Millions are both pretty awesome packages. But I'm a fan.
So. I'm speaking more in an easier swallow pill.
Oh yeah, no, there's nothing easy to swallow about Public Enemy
right.
at all.
Yeah,
particularly if you're white.
The next song, "Spreading the Disease." Is a song where we kind of dip into the icky, where things start getting a little into the underbelly of how things are run here.
And the thing is that "Spreading the Disease"
"Spreading the Disease" is such a great title.
Well,
too.
And it's
oh my god, it's such a great title.
Well, and it has multiple meanings.
Oh, absolutely, it does.
If you look at,
for one thing, this is where we're introduced to Mary.
This is where we're
introduced to Father William.
Mary and Father William, but Mary specifically in that she's Nikki's, for lack of a
love interest,
handler. Mm-hmm. No?
No, at this point she's...
Well, she's his handler now.
She's there to soothe him.
She's his handler.
She's no, she's his Mary Magdalene.
Well, yeah.
She is. I mean, we had the Messiah metaphor in the earlier one.
Sure.
She's his Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
She's been put there to soothe him and calm him and keep him under control.
Keep him in line.
Yeah. I mean, and not necessarily, not necessarily in line, because the drugs are there.
Well,
what she's there is to keep him calm,
pacified,
and focused, and pacified.
Yeah,
and he finds
before you said you didn't think that they had consummated anything, yeah. And see.
It's actually explicitly spelled out in Sweet Sister Mary that they had not, because he calls out to her about giving to him what she's already given to others.
That's true.
Which she gives to everyone else.
Well, this is also where we pretty much spell out Sister Mary's background too. She's a street person. Pretty much like him, and he tends to emphasize with that,
right?
Because she knows she's had a rough life just like he has, or at least he's more sympathetic to her,
right?
This actually has one of my favorite lines in it.
Oh, it's probably this one of mine too, and it's the line that in the original lyric sheet was actually cut.
Mm-mm.
Oh, which one are you?
Religion and sex are powerful.
Oh.
Manipulating people for the money they pay. Selling skin, selling God. The numbers look the same on their credit cards.
Yep. I said that on Twitter today.
The numbers look the same on their credit cards.
Yeah.
And now,
one of the line that I'm talking about is they're describing Mary's background. I'm just going to go ahead and read the whole first lyric here because it's succinct, and you get the point exactly where she's coming from.
The second stanza.
Yes. 16 and on the run from home. Found a job in Times Square working live S&M shows. Now, the original lyric in the album sheet, in the album, read this way. $25 and John's a happy man. Yeah. Now, the way it's sung
on the album is
$25 a fuck and John's a happy man. Mm-hmm. Either way, it actually works.
Yeah.
She wipes the filth away and is back on the streets again,
mm-hmm.
spreading the disease.
Spreading the disease is such a metaphor. In this, it refers to
the sex.
Well, it refers to religion.
The religion.
The sex. I'm talking about the selling of sex.
Right.
And honestly, it refers to HIV. If you think about the time in which this was made.
The big AIDS scare.
AIDS, this is at the height of when AIDS is starting to hit the hetero community.
Mm-hmm.
And between her, because I think there's a reference to her using, too, at some point in this.
No.
Spreading the disease? Maybe not. But the things we find out here is there has not been a single male figure in Mary's life that has not used her for sex.
Right. Right.
Her father, by implication.
Right.
The men that she tricked for, and now...
Well, Father William.
Father William. Which, another great lyric. Father William saved her from the streets. Yep. She drank the lifeblood from the Savior's feet. She's Sister Mary now, with eyes as cold as ice. He takes her once a week on the altar like a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just chilling. Mm-hmm. And you get the point. Yeah, he saved her.
But for his own purposes.
But really. Yeah.
Also when the first pre-sex scandals started coming out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they had been there before, mm-hmm. but they weren't really public at this point. You mentioned the religion and sex are power play lines. There's one lyric in here where while we pay for wars in South America, that line was changed to Saudi Arabia at another point.
Which was wrong originally. We were paying for wars in Central America.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah.
The other one I like in here is the next one, which is fighting fire with empty words. Will the banks get fat, the poor stay poor, the rich get rich,
the cops get paid to look away, as the 1% rules of America. Yep.
Yeah, that doesn't apply to...
Ever.
2010 right now at all.
Put that on a poster.
That applies in every time.
Yep. Put that on a poster and paste on a wall, and you'll get everybody agreeing with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is a status.
I'll go down to the arch on Sunday and march around with that sign, and I'll get nobody to agree with me. In fact, I'll probably get shot.
Mm.
Yep. The cool thing about this one song is we get introduced to two more characters, Mary and William. We're told their stories. We're told their backstories. We're given their roles in this. And by implication, we get to the point where William is likely part of Dr. X's machine.
Well,
and his use of he's the one who is putting Mary in the position of.
And I get the impression through the whole thing that Dr. X has not only got a political machine, but it's almost like he's got his own church as well.
Yeah. Dr. X has his hand in a lot.
What I'm saying is it's almost like he's got a cult to some extent. Yeah. And so there is a church with clergy. And I almost question that William and Mary, while their father William and sister Mary are not of the Roman Catholic Church, let's put it that way.
Right.
That they're of Dr. X's church.
That's the Roman Catholic implication
are there.
And
But that same right. imagery has been co-opted. So many times that same iconography is co-opted by a lot of splinter Christian movement.
And I'll just show my ignorance. Who else uses rosaries? Are there
almost
a lot of them?
Well, for one,
there are actually splinters from the Roman Catholic Church. There's a cardinal. Who's been excommunicated? Who runs a church that's based out of Wyoming? I think.
Okay.
Basically they take issue with church doctrine post Vatican II, and he literally split away and took an entire like faction with him. He's got priests that work under him and everything.
Wow.
But there's The Orthodox churches all use rosaries as well.
Yeah.
So,
those go back to. I mean, those tend to go back to the more core.
Yeah, I mean, that's also a personal thought.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's entirely possible that he's put his fingers into the Catholic Church and is literally.
Because that never happens.
No, it's never been politicized at all.
We go into The Mission.
First time I heard this was as a B-side on a single for Sun Lucidity. It was a live version
really?
Of The Mission.
Oh, I think I've heard that one.
Yeah.
And it's different. Is it the one that's different?
It might be.
Well, also, we might want to mention one thing here. The way Nicky works, essentially he waits for the phone call. And the phone call comes, and it's
when
one word.
When does that
start?
I thought that was...
It's at the very beginning.
No, it's actually the beginning of one of the songs. You know what? They're not putting any of the stuff that's in the beginning of one of the songs.
Hang on one second.
Mm-hmm.
Give me one second.
He essentially sits there, waits for the phone call. The phone call comes, and one word comes through, and that's Mind Crime.
Right.
And that's what sets him off.
Where's the one where he... No, it's not Revolution Calling. It's at Mind Crime, I think. Because Revolution Calling comes straight in from Anarchy X.
Hang on a second. Yeah, you're right.
This doesn't have any of the transitions in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the two that happen before Sweet Sister Mary are the one where he shoots... There's actually three that happen in the first half of the album. There's the one which is the phone ringing, and you hear the... Da-na-na-na,
and then it
rings again, and you hear the Mind Crime. The first time you hear Minecraft, the second time it launches into the song, then there's the one where he shoots the TV, and then there's the one where X pulls up in the limousine and says,
"Now that one's actually in here."
That one's the beginning of Sweet Sister
that's
Mary.
That's Sweet Sister Mary.
Yeah. So the other two were prior to that, because then Needle Lies starts with "I've had enough and I want out."
But nevertheless, Nicky gets his orders, and when his orders come,
spreading the disease. It's spreading. Here it is, right here.
Yeah, that's the TV.
And they explicitly say the TV that he shoots is playing video of Father William.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Which I never got that.
Yeah, that's right. It's Father William
delivering a sermon.
Yeah, giving a sermon.
Right.
Yeah, that's actually you get that in the video that's played in the live versions.
Right.
Go back to that for a second, because I want to look at something. Wow, this is actually wrong. Because the description under speak should be under spreading the disease. The mission is with.
It is the mission.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, go back, because
I know where we're at now.
Well, no, I just want to straighten it. So, at the beginning of
The spacing is bad on this, so they should have it actually spaced
at the beginning
the other
of
way.
Spreading the disease. At the beginning of Operation Mindcrime is the ring. Mm-hmm. And then at the beginning of spreading the mission is the thing with the TV and the shooting the TV.
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
All right. So, at the beginning of the mission...
Ignore all of that.
All right. At the beginning of the mission, the song...
Right.
Nikki's watching television, and it's Father William, and he's preaching, and Nikki shoots the TV.
Well, no, he changes the channel.
He changes it...
It's a news, and then there's
the news
about the technical violation of the 1972 ABM treaty.
Right.
I just listened to it on the car on the way here.
Yeah.
And then he shoots the TV out of frustration. Nikki's losing faith in his...
Nikki's kind of losing it.
Well, he's losing it, and he can't justify it to himself anymore.
Right.
He's lost faith in the cause.
And he's trying. He's reciting phrases from The Wall.
Mm-hmm.
What are we looking at here? Oh, you know.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Right.
And he's talking about that the only thing that keeps him going is Mary.
Yeah. Yeah, Mary's his salvation at this point. He tries to look back on his life and kind of figure out how he got here.
Well, and she brings the only friend that helps me find my way. She's also the one who's delivering his drugs now.
Yeah.
Which
is probably...
She's not administering them, but she brings them to him.
Well... And now, see, maybe that's where I was confused at the line in spreading the disease. Because the beginning of it, he says, when we're alone at night waiting for the call, she feeds my skin. That could very easily be the delivery of the drugs.
Yeah, she feeds my skin. That's what he's
right.
shooting up.
She's bringing it to him.
Yeah.
And she's staying with him. She's staying with him to make sure he's there for the
right.
call.
Right.
The call being...
Mindcrime.
You need to go.
Right.
You need to go do your job. And your job is killing.
Well, and here's the thing. And my mission saved the world, and I stood proud. My mission changed the world. It turned my life around. And so, he's still trying to apply justification to what he's done.
And we started adding in the metaphor of the candle, too.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the... There's a lyric in here that kind of gives you the idea of what the candles are for. I look around and my room is filled with candles. Each one's a story. They end the same. This is how he is
keeping track,
honoring,
mm-hmm.
and keeping track. I mean, you can look at it a bunch of different ways. In religious iconography, it is you light a candle for the dead. You that's how you honor the dead. He's honoring his kills. His kills
still remembers
were people, them. We're important people.
And the candle metaphor also fits into the drug thing, too. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Burning the candle at both ends is a drug metaphor.
Well, that's also how you prepare the heroin in a spoon,
yeah,
too.
Sure.
So
yep.
There's another
yep.
reference there.
Yeah, but so the candle kind of plays in even more mm-hmm. as we go on.
Yeah, in fact, that his room is filled with candles means that he's been very, very busy.
But
yeah,
he's been a very busy boy.
Look at the beginning, from the beginning where he's lost, he's kind of talked himself back into
yep.
it by the end of the song. It's once again Nikki gut checking,
mm-hmm.
and the drugs and Mary allow him to gut check and still stay on the right side of
yep.
it.
Right, because the last stanza is they say, my mission saved the world, and I stood proud. My mission changed the world. The underground will rise. He's still, at this point, the
lyric actually changes, too, because throughout the song, it's my mission, and the last line is our mission.
Yeah, so by the end of the song, he's back on board.
He's back on board. He's back with the plan.
His guilt has been alleviated.
Sister Mary, where it all falls apart.
Oh, and this is probably one of the greatest songs that Queensrÿche has ever done. This is one of my favorites.
I mean, I like it. And
yeah.
It's good. But
it's not even my favorite.
It's not my favorite song
on this album.
Yeah. If you have to ask me my two favorite songs by them,
mm-hmm.
it's Eyes of the Stranger and Anybody Listening. Strangely enough, the final tracks on two consecutive albums.
Mm-hmm.
But
for me, it's probably Anybody Listening and Someone Else.
Yeah.
both songs that end in a question mark. So the beginning of the song is so cool because it's not music. It's the sound of a car pulling up, mm-hmm. a window going down. Dr. X, kill her. That's all you have to do.
Kill Mary?
And get the priest as well.
No, you forgot. She's a risk.
She's a risk. And get the priest as well. William's an afterthought. This is... I've always looked at this as... This is Nikki's test.
Yeah, this is... Oh, this is totally Nikki's
test. This has nothing to do with Mary being a risk or William being... This is... These are the people that held you in line. You are a soldier. You are the death angel. You need to do this,
I think, this
to
is
buy
more,
in fully.
Actually, I think what it is X checking to see how far in he is.
Yeah.
It's X going, okay, I've got this kid under my thumb. I've got him strung out on drugs. The girl, the whole nine yards.
And if nothing else.
He's killing for me and everything. And he's buying in. But how far is he bought in? Can I make him... And the thing is the kind of person who Dr. X is, it gets off on the power.
Well,
and this is, can I make him kill the person he loves?
See, I...
Because William is easy.
William's
the
easy one.
And you know, he does William first.
Oh, yes. Yeah, William's not a problem.
William was never a question. In fact,
in
I
Nikki's
think he
mind,
just was looking for permission.
Right. Yeah, he just needed an excuse at that point.
Oh, he had the excuse.
Well, he was looking... He needed permission.
He needed permission.
Permission is the better word. Another thing that I question in the plan, in Dr. X's plan, was Nikki done? Had he hit all of his marks? Was this his way to implode his death angel?
No, it's a cleanup.
That's a fair assessment.
And this
except,
is a way...
Except the beginning of the next song... When Nikki comes and says, I'm done, I want out. And X's response is, no, you're not done.
Yeah.
You're not done. I say when you're done. And here, thud. Here's some more heroin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sit down, shut up, you junkie.
Right. But I still wonder if that's not part of the plan.
I don't think it's quite.
Let's step through Sweet Sister Mary.
I think this is more of.
This is where we
can I make him do this.
This is where we are introduced to the lovely Pamela Moore's voice, as Mary singing as Mary.
She still does.
She sang live in the full theatrical version that I saw.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. She did it. She did Mary both in Mindcrime 1 and 2. If you're still listening at this point and you haven't listened to the rest of the album, I will go ahead and say right now, there are going to be spoilers from here on out for the story that we are presenting. Because things go downhill quick at this point.
Well, this really should have started this off with...
This is the pivotal point of the story.
Go freaking listen
to
it.
Pause your playback, go listen to Operation Mindcrime, then come back and listen.
Yeah. so they use a different they use something they haven't used so far in this, and that's the time. They actually use time as kind of a placekeeper through the song to advance how the evening goes.
Yeah, it's the story of a single night, and they also this is where they use the Latin choir.
Yes,
with the Deserare. Which is a Latin chant for the dead, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I saw somewhere that it's... And I actually read the English translation.
It's a Catholic rite. It's part of the service for the Requiem, if I remember correctly. For the dead.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's basically
it's dark.
The choir is singing for
it's
the dead.
It's dark.
For those that are about to die.
Yes. And plus, it's... I mean, we've started off with this is your moment. This is the big show for Nikki. The imagery here is really cool, where he's describing the rain,
mm-hmm.
and The way he describes walking through the street, flashing lights as people race to find shelter from the poor, moving silent through the streets, they're mine. They're mine. And he almost whispers, they're mine. And it's and I always get the sense that Nicky is in full on death angel mode at this point. And he's kind of psyching himself up, pumping himself up, and he feels like he is a hunter on the streets.
Well, and at this point, I think the city is aware that there's a predator on the streets,
right?
And so people are not loitering in the dark places.
Yeah,
even the
rain. People are running from the rain, but people are also running from shadows at this point because people are dying.
Yeah,
and no one's apparently safe because it's. You know, we get the sense that it was religious and political leaders. It's not just, you know, someone with a political grudge. It's people in power in general.
Anybody who's been against Dr. X, or at least on Dr. X's hit list.
Right. That happens at 10 p.m. Then at midnight, we hear he comes to Mary. So there's been a passage of time from when his journey has started to now. And he goes to Mary, and he wants her.
My faith is growing tight against the seam.
That is the line that I never caught until it was this last listen through.
Well, and the thing
and the Mary, this is that part of the story from Mary's point of view, because Mary views religion synonymous with sex. And with the use of Father William, Nikki's preaching faith. You have to have faith in me. We can do this together. He wants you dead. We can do this.
Nikki's faith.
And Nikki's faith is he wants to bone her.
Yeah, Nikki's faith.
Nikki's faith is growing tight against the seam.
It also has five letters.
That seam referenced is to his jeans, the front of them.
Well, and the thing is that if you look at it, it starts out where he's kind of reverently talking about her until she says, "I've been waiting for you, come in." And suddenly, it's an argument.
Right.
And, you know, he calls her a whore.
Yeah, you're a whore for the underground.
And, you know, the whole nine yards, and they sent me to kill you.
Right.
He explicitly tells you, they've sent me for you. You know... And now he wants...
Don't offer... The telling line is, don't offer me faith. I've got all I need here.
Yeah.
My faith is growing tight against the seam.
And she says, I've no more want of any faith. And I'll close my eyes and you shoot.
This is the reference that I think you were talking about before, that Mary's a user also.
Yeah.
Bind my arm and feed my mind.
User.
Yeah.
She was a user. And now the... And now she's
let me shooting. Right, but she's saying, "Shoot me up, let me shoot up, then kill me. I'll close my eyes and you shoot."
I think that's an explicit. I think that's an explicit denial of his sexual advance, which he places there.
Right,
and says, "No, I don't want you to save me by sleeping with me. I want you to do it." I don't think she's actually asking him to do it. I think she's daring him to do it because she knows he won't.
Do what? Sleep with her?
Yeah. No, shoot him.
Shoot her.
Shoot her. Yeah, I think he's...
Yeah.
I think she's making the attempt to break him out of the conditioning by saying...
See, I don't know. My mind is that she's pretty much given up at this point. She's so used out and worn out, and now she sees the one guy who didn't...
Put a new
user
right.
Didn't use her.
Is now
sexually,
trying to.
Is now trying to, and now she's lost.
Yeah.
She's lost her faith.
Right.
So it's the only peace I've ever known. Is the heroin high.
Yeah.
And she just wants out.
Yeah. She just wants. She's done. She's spent.
Everybody,
your precious cross is gone. It made me wait so long for what you gave to everyone. The priest is cold and dead on his knees.
Love this. And the way they sing it on the album is different than the way he has sung it live, because I've heard it, and it's because it's
because I always thought it was on his knees he begged.
Yeah, from the priest is cold is cold and dead, on his knees. He fed from my barrel of death.
Yeah.
He turned the holy water red as he died. And this is where it's a little different, because the way he sings it is, as he died, he said, thank you, I just watched him bleed. In concert, it was, as he died, he said, thank you.
Yeah.
I just watched him bleed. It's different, and it's more explicit that Father William was broken, too. He knew he was broken. He knew he was in way too deep, and he was given an out, and he took the out from the gun. And, you know, here, he uses her. Or does he?
No, I don't think he does.
See, I don't know. It's because Mary's line here is, I feel the flow, the blessed stain, sweating hands like fire and flames, burn my thighs, spread in sacrificial rite. The hallowed altar burns my flesh once more tonight.
I wonder. See,
that's a.
Nikki wouldn't have taken her on the altar.
No, he wouldn't have taken her on the altar.
I'm wondering if Nikki came to the church on the night of the week in which Father William took his payment.
Maybe. Yeah. This is where things get a little more.
I really don't think.
And here is where Nikki starts to wake up. Nikki starts to see things for what's going on, and he has a moment of clarity, because he lays it out. We're being used like rats.
Mm-hmm.
This is our chance. If we don't go now, we're in. We're all in, and it's over. But this could be our chance.
She's saying she's not worth saving.
Right.
Well, she doesn't want to be saved.
Well, no. She, the blood of Christ can't heal my wounds so deep. She's saying she's not worth saving.
Right. And right here, well, not only is she not worth saving, but she doesn't feel that she can be redeemed from this.
Well, she loves Nikki.
Yes.
And she doesn't feel that she's worthy of him.
Right.
Right, because she says, I can't split the memory from my mind.
No.
Cry anymore.
No. You need to get the whole quote in there. Mm-hmm. The sins of man are all I taste. Mm-hmm. Can't spit the memory from my mind. I can't cry anymore.
I'm going to cross the streams here and say, go with a little Peter Gabriel. Girl, you got to kiss that frog. But the thing is that I think if you look up further towards the beginning of the song, Mary has decided already what her outcome is.
Yeah, Mary's...
Mary wants to die.
And the thing is that... And I'm going to ask you up front not to spoil...
I won't. No,
I don't want to know what they decided the ending was.
I intend not to spoil it, but I will talk about it in terms of how I thought about it from 1990 through 2005.
I've always taken it very straightforward.
We'll get there. We'll get there in just a couple of tunes.
She has already made the decision that out for her is death.
Yes.
And that not at Nikki's hands.
Right. We'll get there.
I have
a couple of different theories.
Well, and the thing is, she gave Nikki the chance to do it at the beginning of Sweet Sister Mary, and he didn't.
Right.
And now she understands that if she's going to die, it's going to be at her own hands. By the end of Sweet Sister Mary, I think she's already come to that conclusion.
Okay. I won't say anything else. The ending of Sweet Sister Mary is basically Nikki
hasn't completed his mission.
He hasn't completed his mission, and he kind of, in a roundabout way, says that he loves her.
Oh, no, I think he very, very clearly...
I think he loves her. And,
yeah.
The last line, Mary, my lady of pain, always alone, blind you search for the truth. I see myself in you, parallel lives, winding at light speed through time. You're mine.
Yeah, no, I think it's very clear.
Which is an interesting callback,
the
you're mine line,
mm-hmm.
to earlier in the song.
But the thing is that...
It's a long song, too. And this actually ends, if you were listening to it...
impressive
on,
instrumental.
Yeah. On the... On the cassette tape, which was the first version of this I had, this is where it ended.
It was the end of side one.
It was the end of side one.
But if you listen to other ones, you hear another soundtrack in there. Well, you hear another set of sound effects going on.
And what?
In the end of that one. In the end of Sweet Sister... Sweet Sister Mary.
What do you hear?
The sex sounds.
Oh yeah.
I still don't think the relationship's consummated.
I don't know.
It depends on, again, which one you listen to.
I think that she denied him and told him to kill her, which he then proceeded to talk her out of.
Right. I don't think he was aware enough. I think they were arguing around each other, and neither of them got their point across.
And I mean, well, I honestly think
that it was more that than anything.
Reasons why they can get away.
Right.
And all he's
hearing is, "I don't want to go with you." When she's really saying, "Just end this."
Well, and there's no way out.
Right.
She's trying to tell him, "You're trying to escape, and there's no way out."
Yeah.
The only way out is death.
Yes. So
we roll into The Needle Lies.
The Needle Lies, which
had enough and I went out.
Freaking awesome song.
Nikki comes back and tells Dr. X, "I'm done.
You can't walk away now." The icon
kind of got a speed metal feel to it.
Yes, it does. It's very fast, very very grinding. The Needle Eyes. Basically, Nikki's come to the realization that the drugs
are part of the problem.
Are a big part of the problem,
and they're what are controlling him.
Yeah, and he needs to do something to break that habit. And I always look at this as very literal. Mm-hmm. I imagine very literally that he picks up a knife and carves into his arm the Needle Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it says, and that could be metaphorical, but I believe that's kind of what happens here. He's doing what he can to try and break the cycle, and he's just telling himself as much as any junkie can, who's still probably got some of the crap running through your system. Don't do this anymore. You need to get out from under this. The needle is lying to you.
Well, he's literally carved it into his arm where he would shoot up.
Well, right. Also the other thing too is he's crashing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Mary wouldn't have been feeding him.
Right. He's not. His high's wearing off now, and he's starting to crash. And now he's starting to realize this is what. He's coming down fast.
Yeah.
I think that's all that needs to be said about that.
Right.
We get another taste of the mirror.
Yeah.
Walking out of his room with mirrors, afraid I heard him scream, "You'll never get away." That's all right. Moving on, breaking the silence.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yes, electric. Yes, yeah. This is where shit has gotten real.
Nikki goes back to Mary.
Nikki goes back to Mary.
Tell him that
to say, "Hey,
away.
Look, we're out. I'm out. Let's do this. We're gone."
And she's dead.
And she's dead.
And that leads to even in death, you will still look sad.
Oh, this is
also too. He's now realized he's totally alone.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. This is
the only person who ever cared for him as a person is gone.
Right. And now he sees. I think breaking the silence is kind of where he gets a little introspective. And in all the times in the past, he's gone introspective and tried to justify what he had done.
Mary's there.
What's that?
In all the times in the past, when he's gone introspective and tried to justify it, Mary was there.
Mary's there to help him through it, yeah.
And he says,
"And now he's,
I look for your face in the neon light, you never answer me."
Mm-hmm. He also kind of blames her.
Yeah. Oh.
And
that is
nothing
why
we shared means a thing without you close to me. I can't live without you.
And that's why I think it's a suicide. That's one of the reasons.
Well, that's your
because when someone takes that way out, that's where the anger comes in.
Well,
the anger is you know, how could you walk out on those things we had? Nothing we shared means a thing. You know.
Well, it's nothing. Nothing we shared means a thing without you here.
Yeah.
You know, everything that we've been through is now worthless. You know, any plan we may have thought of, anything that we may have assumed about our future is now gone because you're dead.
Yep.
Well, regardless of how the death occurs.
Well, one other thing too. This is a typical cry of codependence.
Oh.
Well, codependence and addiction. I mean, this guy is so in.
I've heard this song quite a bit.
Yeah, this is Nicky's angst. His anger, death.
Yeah, he's angry with her.
Yeah, and we're still in that night.
Mm-hmm.
I hear your voice in the evening rain. So we're still that same night. We're still in a very short period of time in here. And this goes into I Don't Believe in Love, which this song is my favorite song on this album.
Does anyone here believe in love? Because I don't.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. That's how he introduced it in live shows.
He actually does live.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah, that's how he introduced it in live shows. This song is so great because this is Nicky trying to convince himself that he wasn't in love with her.
Well, and not only convince her, but I think at this point he's being questioned about her death.
Right. Yeah. He was found.
But he's being questioned because he was found with the body.
Right. Right. Yeah, because he kind of lost it when he found her dead.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
I think this is his
whacked out answers to their questions.
Yeah, this is him responding to the interrogation.
Yeah. What was your relationship to her, basically?
You know, it's that hysterical, she says she loved me, I guess I never know, but do we ever really know?
I mean, the telling line is the chorus, I don't believe in love, I never have, I never will, it's never worth the pain that you feel. This is not about that he did not love her. This is his denial, because if he denies it, then he doesn't have to feel the pain over its loss.
Well, I also think it's even the practicality of it of he's trying to convince them that he doesn't believe in love, that he wasn't in love with her, so that he's not a suspect.
Right.
It was not a crime of passion. But again, at this point, we don't know really how Sister Mary died.
And through this, you don't.
Right.
There is no answer to her death.
No chance for contact. There's no raison d'être. My only hope is one day I'll forget the pain of knowing what can never be with or without love. It's all the same to me.
Yeah.
Well, he's now rationalizing his loss.
He's trying to.
He's trying.
I don't think he's trying to.
Part of him is trying to put it behind him, and he's trying to rationalize it away, and the other part of him just won't let him do it.
Right.
So he's basically in a fight with his own self, torn apart between his anger at her and his rational mind, his passion for her.
Yeah. Waiting for 22.
This is an instrumental track.
Oh, man. This is the one that's the guitar duet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's DeGarmo and
Wilton.
Yeah. And Eddie. Or Michael.
Michael Wilton, yeah. With a real simple guitar, and then DeGarmo comes screeching in at the end.
Comes in being all awesome and shit.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
What is your take on Waiting for 22? I'm curious about what your take is on the title, because I was a big Bored fiend back in the day, as it were. And there was a lot of discussions.
I've never questioned the title, to be honest with you.
There was a lot of questioning about the title, what exactly it meant.
Waiting for 22 in my empty room get in the way of me getting the eyes of the stranger.
It's late. I'm not thinking straight.
I think the ideas
that were bandied about and what tended to be the most commonly held theme was, it was waiting to see who number 22 was going to be.
Yeah,
and number 22, number 22,
he's
because
for his next mission is what he's.
Yeah,
doing.
It's in number 22 is the 22nd candle,
yeah.
And realistically, the idea that everyone kind of bandied about was number 22. Is it going to be Nicky or Dr. X?
Well, and the thing is that you get in here. You know, empty room, into my empty room today, and here I sit, chalk outline upon the wall. I remember tracing it 1,000 times the night she died. So he's just been sitting in his room, waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
Going over the whole thing with Mary over and over his head again.
He's got nothing, he's got nowhere to go, he's got nothing.
He's not sleeping, You know, no one's... He's living in filth, I think, to some extent.
Probably. And,
because,
and
you know, to wash away my sins, clean my room, fix my meals, be my friend.
One of the things that we haven't discussed is there is an aspect that when he gets the phone call, that not only is it that's his call for a mission, but there's some mind control going on. There's some hypnosis. There was some hypnosis involved with the drugs.
Well, I think between the drugs and whatever brainwashing's been done to him, there needed to be someone there to care for him.
Right.
And that's what Mary
was supposed to do.
And another thing that this calls out is when all my dreams are crimes.
Yeah.
And this is the point when he's starting to get some realization that the things that he did, he was sheltered from, and maybe
there's no justification anymore.
Yeah, he was sheltered from what he did, and his blackouts where he was on his missions.
Yeah.
The realizations are starting to come in that he killed people.
Yeah.
He did bad things for a bad person.
Blacked out, but I think that
I think it was haze, an aspect of the haze of mind control and drugs. Yeah,
he did things, and that was, you know, what Speak and the mission were him justifying those things that he knew he did.
And the heroin was essentially just
without the drugs and without Mary.
I'm teasing you with it.
I hate you. Die in a fire. I will poop on your car. Your garage door is open.
So we go into Eyes of a Stranger, and we start off with that replay of the canned doctor sounds. There's a kind of a flurry of sounds that harken back to everything we've heard before.
And then there's more awesome.
And then there's more awesome.
Because the opening instrumental in Eyes of a Stranger is reminiscent of Beginning of a Revolution Calling. There's themes from other songs that are rolling into it. And from Anarchy X, the drum line is there.
Oh, yeah.
And then it all backs away, and we launch into Eyes of a Stranger, which is
awesome. It's a good standalone song too.
It's a great standalone song. There were, I think there were a couple singles off this. I don't believe in Love.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't aware of them when they were singling.
Yeah. I wasn't aware of them either. But
I think Eyes of a Stranger like was one of them.
I think Eyes of a Stranger and I Don't Believe in Love.
Probably,
I mean,
Revolution Calling, it could probably have stood as a single, like Anarchy X Revolution Calling, but you never would have gotten any radio airplay with that lead in.
No.
So.
Alright, so, Eyes of a Stranger.
The problem, just before we get into that, the Queensryche has with radio airplay and ever getting it, was they are not a 3.5 minute, 4 minute song band.
Nope.
And the fact that they got radio airplay with Silent Lucidity, they got radio airplay with a shortened radio edit. The actual full album version of Silent Lucidity very rarely got played.
Right. Anybody listening got chopped up badly.
So, I mean, the thing is that they were never conducive to radio airplay.
Right.
And in the late 80s, early 90s, you had 3.5 to 4 minutes unless you were Meatloaf.
Until we got into the early 90s, and then that expanded a little bit, and then Empire came out, and they got a lot of airplay. They had a lot of radio play.
Empire was in 1990.
The early
90s. Okay. I'm sorry. I thought you said late 90s.
No. Early 90s. If I said late 90s, I meant early 90s. Yeah. I could have misspoke. It's late.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I have no idea.
We come back to the mirror. This is
all alone now, except for the memories.
It's wrapping everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees her.
Her dead. Every night the dreams will return to haunt me. Your rosary wrapped around your throat.
Yeah. That's an interesting...
I still don't buy that X had her killed. I don't buy it.
I'm not saying anything.
I know. I think it was a suicide. It makes more sense as a suicide to me.
I look at there being three plausible explanations for what happened. First, she committed suicide.
Which fits with her background.
Mm-hmm.
how damaged she was.
Yep.
It fits with her statements in Sweet Sister Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And it fits with how much she cared for Nikki. Because if she wasn't there anymore, they couldn't use him anymore.
All right. So, three plausibles. That's the first. Second, Dr. X had her killed or killed her himself.
Yeah.
Less likely.
The same thing.
Less likely. Mm-hmm. But plausible. That questions
is whether your third one that Nikki killed her.
Yeah,
I don't buy it.
I think that's more plausible than Dr. X having someone else do it.
I don't. To be honest with you, I don't buy that.
And even if he did, no matter which happened, Nikki blames X for it.
Well, and
no matter what happens,
and the simple fact is,
no matter what happens, Mary is an innocent in that.
Even if she did it
herself,
yeah.
Nikki looks at Mary as the innocent in this, and it's all Dr. X's fault.
If you look at what X set him to do, he set him to kill Mary, mm-hmm. and the priest, and he comes back and says, "I didn't kill her, and I went out." Well, now,
and he gives him a big old box of drugs.
Well, and sends him back to his apartment. I mean, granted, he goes to see Mary and finds her dead, but he basically sends him on his way.
Yep.
At that point, X has to know that Nikki is useless to him now. I don't think he could have gotten Nikki to kill anyone at that point. I think that at that point, if you're X and the mission hasn't been fulfilled by the guy you sent to do it, then you send someone else to do it. But I think, to be honest with you, probably what happened... By the time whoever X sent to do it, she'd already killed herself. Because I think she killed herself the moment Nikki walked out the door.
Okay. I can't say anything else. I'm not going to spoil it for you.
That's fine. Because there was no other album. Ha!
Bullshit. Anyway. So, yeah. This is... I always look at Eyes of a Stranger as... And it may have even been stated somewhere else... Eyes of a Stranger is Nikki is in the hospital at this point,
right? Because you get the voice, the sound effect at the beginning indicates that he's there.
Yeah, this is his, you know, and he even says straitjacket memories, sedative highs, no happy ending like they've always promised. He's in the hospital. He's under observation.
He's been detoxed.
He's been detoxed. He's.
And here's the mirror again, and I raise my head and stare into the eyes of a stranger. I've always known that the mirror never lies.
Such a great line, and it is a universal truth. You walk down the street, you look into a stranger's eyes, and they turn away. Mm-hmm. It's a truth.
To know what lies behind the stare.
Yeah, especially in a city where there's been killings and there's fear. To have someone you don't know look you in the eye. Is that the guy? Is he going to come after me? Am I the next target? Why is he looking at me?
You get the bridge here of, you know, how many times must I live this tragedy? How many more lies will they tell me? All I want is the same as everyone. Why am I here and for how long?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's... He wants a normal life. And he can't... He's
not going to get it.
Understanding that he's never going to get it.
Yep.
Because it's all crashing down on him now.
Yep. And this is where it comes to an end. And then we see 601. This has happened in the span of a minute. And it's him replaying
it over and over in his mind.
In a minute.
Before the sedatives take hold.
Before the sedatives kick in and he forgets it all again. Because if he remembers it, at least it's real.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those of us who choose to realize that there was another album, I'm not going to go into the details of it, but the general idea is that it takes place. It was released 18 years later. It picks up 18 years later, and Nikki is walking out of prison. The prison systems are crowded. Even with the life sentence, you can get out. And it's the story of what happens to Nikki and where he takes his life after he gets out. Dr. X does play a factor in it, and Dr. X is voiced by the late, great Ronnie James Dio, which was really well done for this. Some good tunes, even if you don't choose to believe they exist.
You're going to make me edit this episode so I can cut this entire portion of the episode out, aren't you?
No, it's I think it's worthy of listening to. And if I'm not mistaken, if you listen to the album, you don't get spoiled on what happened to Mary. It's if you don't want to know what happened to Mary, don't watch Mindcrime at the Moor. Do not watch it because you will be explicitly shown exactly how Mary's death occurs. I questioned it at the time, too, at this point.
I think it's a mistake because I think it has more power if it's left up
to the mind of the individual.
I think any time you leave a hanging question like that in a work, whether it's a novel or a movie or a concept album like this,
if you leave it up to the interpretation,
you diminish the impact of the original if you come along later and reveal the answer to the question.
There is that. But if you don't see that work, you don't get that answer.
Well, one other thing, too, is after 20-some years, they may have decided it's time for closure on this thing.
It, you know what? That is still held as a spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
For people, it's not in the Wikipedia article. Yeah. It's... If anybody's going to spoil it, that's the place to do it. Because that is a bastion of fact, or as much as you can, you know, say that. But you know, it's still held as a spoiler that people honor and respect. I'm honoring and respecting it right now. It is something that I don't want to ruin for somebody else. I've had it quote unquote ruined for me. It was powerful when I saw it, but it was one of those things that, you know, it is knowing an answer to a burning question. You know, whether that diminished it for me or just settled the question, for me, it didn't hurt me knowing, but I'm not going to take away somebody else's joy of the mystery either.
That's because being a dick isn't your move, it's Adam's.
True. That is true. So with that, we have Operation Mindcrime.
An album well worth listening to, even if you're not a Queensryche fan.
Yeah, it's got a heavy edge to it. There is that potty mouth word in there. But it's one occurrence and it's really not. It's no worse.
I love how you're talking about a metal album and you just referred to it as that potty mouth word. My God, man.
Yeah, but Queensryche doesn't go that route.
I know. I know. Yeah. I'm making fun of you.
No. Billy Joel uses it in one of his albums. It's the song Laura, so there. But yeah, I mean, I'm doing this for the people who probably have never had the opportunity to listen to the album. I don't want them to be surprised when they're playing it in their car for their children. That would be a bad move. Just in general terms. I'll never forget, though, one time I was taking a car trip from back from U of I to home with my mom. And I played the album for her. And we talked through it. And I was 20. At the time,
full of rage.
Hey, that was the way shit was, man. And you know, it's funny as political and as timely as this was at the time. It's still timely.
Mm-hmm.
Arguably, their next album, Empire, has even deeper politics and a different set of politics that go along with it.
Hmm?
I mean, there's a lot of very strong political statements in Empire.
Yeah, I'd say most of them are contained within Empire, within the song Empire.
Well, no, you've got Della Brown. It's about homelessness.
Yeah,
it's what's the tree hugger song? damn it, which. I'm blanking on which one that is. You know what I'm talking about.
I have no idea. If it's the song right after Silent Lucidity, it's the one I hate.
I'm blanking.
And I never listened to.
Oh, Jeff was in there. Somebody was in there. Stingray! Sorry, man, we didn't realize you were in there.
Yay, Stinger agrees with me. Makes me happy. Him and his giant hands.
Resistance.
Yeah, that's the one that I don't listen to.
Resistance.
It's not after Sons, it's after Empire. But, yeah, I do not care for Resistance. Are you sure it's not Hand on Heart? Hand on Heart's pretty tree-huggy.
No, Hand on Heart's is a love song.
Okay.
Not getting the lyrics.
There you go. That's awesome.
The Thin Line's a nice BDSM song. Deny it. It is.
I have no comment, Senator.
Best I Can. I like Best I Can, too. That's a.
I will not deny that I have sung Silent Lucidity to at least two children.
So. I won't deny that exact same fact. It's a lullaby.
Yeah.
It was written as a lullaby. Yep. It is a lullaby.
Anybody listening is still an amazing song.
Mm-hmm. And their covers are actually really, really good, too. Scarborough Fair.
You know what? I don't have any of the remasters, so.
That was a B-side. Okay. CD single B-side.
I've actually got CDs of Empire and Minecraft. And I think my ex-wife got Promised Land.
All of them. I have all of the CDs. Last Time in Paris is a fun song, too.
Yeah, you know why? The only reason I ended up with Empire and Mindcrime is because we had two copies of each one.
Nice.
Everything else, we only had one copy.
That's it.